Up next, we're going to hear from Russia's foreign ministry. This is Maria Zakharova, who's the spokesperson for the ministry, at her weekly press conference Thursday.
Good afternoon, colleagues. As usual, we start with the schedule. The foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov. I'd like to say that today there is one more unannounced event. In the afternoon, Mr. Lavrov will deliver a statement at the Forum Russia, Country of Opportunities, talking about the future of Russia. There will be present many participants. This platform was created according to the initiative of the President of Russia, and that work is meant to promote transparent social lifts and progress for the benefit of the youth and professionals of Russia. We will be disseminate live across every social platform, website, accounts. I think that would be a very good discussion, so I welcome you to join in and listen to it and watch it. 19th to 20th of March, Mr. Lavrov will visit Vietnam, an official visit. He is to talk with the Prime Minister, Foreign Minister of the country, and he will also hold a couple of meetings with other members of the authorities. The focal point will be further enhancement of relations, our comprehensive strategic partnership, political dialogue, trade, economic, technological cooperation, military cooperation as well. He will discuss the humanitarian work and cooperation. In 2019, there will be an exchange year of the two countries, Russian year in Vietnam and Vietnamese year in Russia. The outcomes are expected to feature signing a couple of documents for the 2019-2020 years. So after that, March 21 to 22, Russian Foreign Minister is to travel to Tokyo for an official meeting with the Prime Minister, the head of Japan. They are to discuss the whole array of questions relating to trade, economic, political, cultural, and humanitarian aspects of the bilateral ties between the countries. Also, they are to discuss the Korean Peninsula, Syria cooperation across many platforms, bilateral, multilateral. Also, some contacts are to be launched with the authorities on the follow-up of the meetings which took place before in 2017 and 2016. And that will be another step to organize and prepare things for the visit of Russian President Vladimir Putin, which is to take place in May. It is expected that the plan of interministerial plan for events and meetings will be signed for the upcoming 2 years. Also, I'd like to announce, and this way I will unveil some secret for you. At this very point, Mr. Lavrov has given an interview to Vietnamese and Japanese journalists, and it will be published on Friday evening, to be particular, and Mr. Lavrov, the Foreign Minister, gives every detail about the formats, about the platforms where we cooperate with Vietnam, with Japan. So it's a full-format interview, full-fledged interview. We'll also publish the necessary materials and documents on the visit on our website. On the 26th of May, annual meeting of the fund supporting the diplomatic efforts named after Gorshakov will take place. This meeting will feature the presentation of the results achieved by the foundation, and it will also feature presentation of the plans for the upcoming years. It was created back in 2010 upon the initiative of the Russian president in order to support public diplomacy, facilitate the work of Russian non-profit organizations in the global efforts, as well as to seek further involvement of the civil society in the humanitarian and political processes. On the 27th of March, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will participate in international high-level conference on security and territorial and regional cooperation with Afghanistan. It will take place in Tashkent. It meant to make a broad consensus on the key aspects of the peaceful resolution to the crisis in Afghanistan, ways to seek further enhanced security, as well as a quest to involve Afghanistan in more trade, economic, and humanitarian efforts in Central Asia and further abroad. We see the Tashkent conference as another round of efforts to support the SCO Afghanistan initiative and Moscow initiative in order to bring more stabilized peace in Afghanistan for the sake of a sustainable development. Now we turn to the topical issues of the international agenda. We've been updating you on a regular basis, as you know, and now the bottom line for the elections in terms of what have been done by the foreign minister, we can say without any excess of humility that we've done a lot of things. We've prepared almost everything, or everything we say this way, that we've done all possible things because we've expanded the geography of the polling stations. We have 394 polling stations and 144 countries across the world. Before that, we had 370 polling stations. So we expanded the geography for the early voting. And we see it as a huge achievement. As for the parliamentary elections, the number rose by more than 100 polling stations to 90 countries of the world. Just unprecedented scale and scope of work. According to the evening of March 14th, we've conducted every possible operation to install and to finalize the work of the polling station. We've experienced certain problems on the way. Some problems are pending resolution. It has to do with Ukraine, and on which we've been updating you, giving the necessary comments through the website and other means. So there are still problems in carrying out a proper functioning of the early polling station in Estonia and Latvia. They refuse to open up additional polling stations or to hold any special kind of voting. However, in these countries, almost 300,000 Russian citizens live currently, and that is certainly a load on the local diplomatic missions, but we still seek every possible opportunity to present these people with their right to vote as per constitution. Social media and through the internet, we published regularly new updates on the preparation for the voting, for the early voting on the 18th of March, as you know, we'll be holding the overall polling, and you can watch it live 24/7. I mean, you can track and you can watch the polling and the voting across our diplomatic missions across the world. If you want to come to any country and cover the voting at any of our diplomatic missions, you can go to our website and the websites of our embassies, and there you can find the hotlines, contact numbers. You can contact them and ask them for this opportunity. If you have any troubles doing that, please reach out to the departments, relevant departments of the Foreign Ministry, and we will give you every necessary support. Regarding the situation in Syria, military and political situation in Syria is still somewhat problematic. At the same time, we see that the trajectory of events is coming towards the stabilization and normal life. Russia adheres to the 2254 resolution In every possible way, we continue to apply every effort to seek early resolution to the crisis and eradication of the remnants of international terrorism. On the 16th of March, as you know, we announced that before, the capital of Kazakhstan will feature another meeting of the foreign ministers of the guarantors of the Astana process, Iran, Turkey, Russia. They are to discuss the situation in Syria, de-escalation, and concrete steps be taken to reinstall peace and security in Syria. Russian military continue to hold active dialogue with the local armed groups in order to convince them to lay down the arms to separate themselves from the terrorists. As for detailed comments on the developments in Syria are being given by the Ministry of Defense, so the governmental forces of Syria, they are conducting large-scale anti-terrorist operations in the eastern Ghouta region. Russian Reconciliation Center helps the government of Syria to carry out every possible effort to minimize the human losses and to ensure peaceful transition of people from the terrorist control regions to the regions liberated from the terrorists. Every day, as we've already said, there are 5-hour pauses and a couple of humanitarian corridors are functioning currently near the settlement Jisrei, Imliha. Another corridor on the Syrian initiative was opened in Haraz, and Misraba, a liberated settlement, saw the retrieval of more than 40 people. Another UN and Red Cross and Red Crescent convoy had been given the permission to pass in order to deliver the aid for 12,000 people. Extremists continue to undermine the humanitarian pause initiative, and they do not let the people leave the region. Ar-Rahman opened fire on a convoy of civilians who wanted to seek the opportunity to leave the area. 2 young kids died, as well as 1 woman. Terrorists shelled Damascus. On the 11th of March, the Syrian capital saw several explosions. Fire was targeted Barzama, Bab, Kasa, and Bazuria, and other districts have been targeted by the extremists. According to the law enforcement bodies and the healthcare minister, only that very day saw the loss of life of 4 people and 26 people were injured. We again call upon all our regional international partners to hold a genuine cooperation in order to seek early resolution to the Syrian conflict and prevent the further undermining of the situation and humanitarian pause. We would like to
normalize situation in the country. We would like also to issue a separate warning to Washington. It's necessary to strongly respect norms of international law, and it's inadmissible to use a cowboy act of force against sovereign Syria, which is a member state of the United Nations. As for the statements, I'm talking about another issue which is pressing these days. I'm talking about the declarations made by the British Prime Minister in the Parliament. These are preposterous accusations that were made against Russia, against Russian people. We published statement, the ministry statement. It's published on the official website. It's believed that due to action, non-friendly actions taken by the British against the Russian Federation, we are going to talk about retaliatory measures that we will take. We are working on them at the moment, and we will take them as soon as possible. I would like to inform you that through the Russian embassy, we sent to the Foreign Office several diplomatic notes. These notes were sent in order to start an active dialogue with London on the situation that we have concerning the use of nerve agent on the British territory. These notes call to start joint work. This note calls to give access to all the material that we have about the use of all the institutions and the organizations of the OPCW. The notes also included the request to provide access to Ms. Kripal, who is a Russian citizen. And there was another document that was sent to Foreign Office.
There have been published information regarding a possibility of a cyber attack by the officials from the United Kingdom against the Russian Federation. A total of four diplomatic notes have been sent as a response. We received some meaningless replies. Besides that, as of today, the United Kingdom refuses any cooperation with the Russian Federation regarding its obligations under the Convention on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. This was said in particular on the premises of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Any attempts to get the official London into the legal space, as the problem is difficult and we are seriously concerned by what happened several days ago in the United Kingdom. We are extremely concerned by the situation and all the information that we receive regarding the use of chemical weapons in the United Kingdom. So I can once again officially reiterate that official London refuses providing any evidence on this case. They are not at all intending to provide the Russian Federation samples of the substance that was found at the space. I can also officially confirm that no details, no information whatsoever that could shed slightest light on what has happened hasn't been provided by official London to Moscow, neither through bilateral channels nor through the international organizations. We see a continuation of this informational and political circus show. We see an attempt to use in particular the mechanisms of the UN Security Council. In order to once again, with repeated power, fuel the anti-Russian hysteria and anti-Russian campaign, we will draw our conclusions, and I believe many members of the international community have made their conclusions regarding their level of trust to the official London. We call once again upon the United Kingdom to provide all materials at its disposal regarding this incident, as they call it, regarding the spread of chemical weapons on the British soil. Let's now go over to other issues of the global agenda. We receive regular answers with requests to comment on the situation in Myanmar. We do it on a regular basis. Let me now get back to it. We closely follow the situation in the Republic of Myanmar. Its leadership takes efforts to ensure the peaceful process within the country. In some Myanmar regions, a difficult situation remains. There are recurring attacks of irreconcilable armed ethnic groups. In particular, in late February, in the city of Sitwe, the administrative center of the Rakhine state, improvised explosive devices were operated. The Myanmar authorities take efforts to put in place conditions for people to be able to get back to their homes, those people who fled the northern regions of the Rakhine state before to the Bangladesh. Camps are being installed to initially receive them, and active measures are being taken to address the humanitarian situation in this region. In particular, they have restored the work of schools closed last year because of extremist attacks. in early March, another fifth group of young volunteers arrived in Rakhine. They deliver and distribute help to the residents of villages that suffered from the situation. There are works to restore permanent power supplies to the northern regions of Rakhine. Documents have been verified of more than 8,000 of refugees that were provided in February this year by Bangladesh to the Myanmar authorities. In order to prevent infiltration to Rakhine of militants, the border services of two countries increased the number of patrols along the borderline and the number of police and border checkpoints. The Myanmar authorities are doing all things necessary to inform the international community of the real situation in Rakhine. In February, three travels have been organized for the diplomatic corps, and this region is regularly visited by foreign and local journalists. Let's also touch upon several other issues. In particular, I would like to tell you about something we've been often asked about regarding the work of international organizations that work within the Ministry of the Foreign Affairs. Like, for example, on the 28th of March, the 20th anniversary of the Veterans Organization of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia will be celebrated. It has been established by the General Assembly of Veterans, and it was registered in 1908. Its founding fathers include Mr. Sudarikov, Ambassador Farafanov, Envoy Kostovsky. Today, its members include hero of the Soviet Union, Sergei Romantsev. Early, its members included three heroes of the Soviet Union and full cavalier of the Orders of Glory and three heroes of socialist labor. Today, the counts of the veterans counts 1,558 persons, including 500 peoples, women. There are 34 primary veteran organizations within the departments of the ministry. There are 158 veterans of the Great Patriotic War, 20 honored workers of the diplomatic service in Russia, 112 honored workers of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, 144 ambassadors, and 250 envoys. The organization focuses on providing social economic support for the veterans and organizing some events and so on and so on. The leadership of the ministry and the minister in particular pay close attention to the issues of providing support for veterans and veterans organizations. They help addressing some urgent needs. There are regular meetings of Sergei Lavrov with the leadership of the Veterans Council. And obviously, we believe this work should be continued, and it will go on. Besides that, I would like to say that a regional charity, social and economic foundation has been established in order to provide help for the veterans. It's called the Foundation for Support of the Veterans. It's main goal is providing social support for veterans, disabled persons, and socially vulnerable people, those who found themselves in a difficult situation with regard to the veterans of the Russian diplomatic service. The Charity Foundation has established a board of trustees headed by the Minister of Foreign Affairs, given its important role in providing social and economic support to the veterans. The board is headed by Mr. Chikvadze, invites representatives of business communities and other international organizations, as well as private persons and citizens, to participate in the work of this foundation. I can state that even young people can envy their veterans regarding their active life. We will support these organizations. Another answer that we got prior to the briefing was an answer to comment on it. Let me first of all quote the answer itself. It came from Azerbaijani media. According to one of Russian information agencies, on the 22nd of February, a roundtable was held. Free Artsakh with representatives of Artsakh in Moscow, Albert Adrian. It was reported that a public organization will be established in Russia, an organization of friendship between Moscow and Artsakh. Let me explain what it is about. In Moscow, there is no representation of the Republic of Artsakh, as it was mentioned in the question and as it was reported in the media. As far as I know, the event was attended by a member of the diplomatic service of Armenia, and as regards the society of the Russia-Artsakh friendship, I think it's not necessary to comment on that. We have various organizations. Most importantly, their existence should not violate the Russian legislation. I think that's all for introductory remarks. I'm ready to answer your questions. Yerevan, Khan Papian, Novoye Vremya. As we know, currently in the United Kingdom, President of the unrecognized Nagorno-Karabakh Republic is meeting with the U.S. Congressman. Besides that, his meetings are planned with expert communities and think tanks. In this regard, I have the following question. Can this be related to the new circumstances, new developments of the Nagorno-Karabakh settlement, and can we expect a similar visit of the Karabakh leader to Moscow? Well, you know, talking about representatives of some region visit some other region seems strange to me. I think this answer should be addressed to the United States of America. As regards the Russian Federation, I know nothing about such meetings. I can only clarify it later. We are committed to all our obligations under the Nagorno-Karabakh settlement on the basis of the arrangements in place, and we try to actively contribute to the full-fledged settlement of this very difficult issue. Yes, please. Anna Usanova, Moscow-Baku Information Agency. Mr. Lavrov, yesterday at the meeting with Milat Chavusoglu, stated that the Russian-Turkey agenda always has a situation on Transcaucasus. Can we say that the issue of Nagorno-Karabakh settlement is regularly discussed? The Nagorno-Karabakh settlement is being discussed with a number of our partners, with court chairs and with the countries of the regions. It is normal. It is part of diplomatic work. Andrei Afanasyev. Yesterday, media reported that ostensibly the pressure on Russian diplomats in the UK has been exercised before. In particular, some colleagues cited the words by ministers that even the conversation with Boris Johnson and didn't resolve the issue of issuing visas for our diplomats. Is it true? And I would like to answer, to listen to your comment to the United States statement entitled "Crimea is Ukraine" as a response to the visit by Vladimir Putin to this substituent entity of our country. While as regards the pressure on the Russian diplomats in the UK and settlement of the visa issue, I can say the following. Yesterday, if you saw the statement by Ms. May, you can draw your own conclusions as regards pressure on Russian diplomats. It is an example of how head of the nuclear power considered it possible to talk to Russian diplomats, and actually she addressed Russian citizens of Russia. She spoke about our people. We saw yesterday what British love towards Russia looks like. We continue to see it in international organizations. The kind of love manifests itself, particularly, obviously, there. And there, our colleagues really demonstrate their love towards the Russian people in a full-fledged manner. And I should say they receive a worthy answer to that. As regards the visa war, and I can definitely characterize the situation like that. Well, for a long time we considered it correct to settle the situation via bilateral channels, so we commented on that, but did it in a very correct way. But since London made a choice that we all know about, let me elaborate on that. We mentioned that yesterday. Indeed, and during some years, Russian diplomats have been basically pushed away. There have been all kinds of obstacles on the part of British officials, including the visa mechanisms. It was very simple when a visa term of validity expired, and we sent diplomatic notes to prolong the visas. Well, as you understand, diplomats don't leave the country. They simply prolong their existing visas by staying members of the diplomatic mission. The time frame for receiving any sort of reply from official London was not limited.
As you know, visas are given in the set terms, and these terms have been established by agreements, and in general, the cooperation between the diplomatic corps of the country is set in the relevant international documents. Besides, there is also common sense, but they neglected all of that. And many of our employees, our diplomats working in the embassy, in fact, did not get new visas. And during the high-level meetings at the level of ministers of foreign affairs, Russia has proposed to unblock this situation. At some point, we realized that this situation was not an accident, but they were doing everything they could to aggravate the work of our employees as much as possible. As for the declaration of the State Department saying that Crimea is Ukraine, you know, this looks like a lecture dreams and other illusions. Igor Zhdanov, Russia Today. Yesterday, the British Parliament declared that if Russia responded to sending out of its diplomats by sending out British diplomats from Moscow, then Britain would do the same and will simply send out even more Russian diplomats. And the question, who could win in such a competition when one party replies more harshly to the actions of the other party, and what are the chances to normalize the relations with Britain? You see, you need to ask this question in London. The question, who could win, should be given to those who started this campaign. We have no doubts that this is a campaign. From the very first moment, we requested all the available information on the incident. From the very beginning, we suggested using international mechanisms and documents not just to raise doubts, they cannot be raised in a couple of days, but in order to begin deep analytical work on what has happened, let me remind you that, all right, it happened in Europe. This was an absolutely unprecedented case. We only use their words, we do not have official data. As Britain says, they used a chemical poisoning agent in order to attack a British subject, a citizen of the Russian Federation. Everything Russia could do was done. We do not have any information or data. We only have their unwillingness to cooperate. You should ask them this question. It is whether they want to win in what, and what they think about victory in this case. This is not a question you should ask us. Once again, even during this hysteria demonstrated by London, during this show, under these circumstances, we were as constructive as possible, trying to establish normal, or as far as we can get, legal basis and dialogue. This is not about sympathies or any special feelings that we should demonstrate. This is about a normal legal work on investigating what has happened. This is an information and political campaign. The conclusions were made during the first day. What can we talk about here? Did you have any other questions? Yes. What do you think about the chances to normalize the relations with Britain? But perhaps it is a question to ask them too. The chances to normalize? I will think about it. Yes, please. Associated Press, how could you react on this speech by the US representative during the UN Security Council session yesterday and the fact that the United States, of course, supported the position of Great Britain on Skripal's case? This is a great question. Thank you very much. We also had this question. This was the position of the US representative to the UN. Was this the position of the State Department or of the US structures working on the problems of nuclear non-proliferation and chemical non-proliferation? Was this the position of the US President's administration? Whose position was that? Or was it also a part of the bigger plan? If it is a part of the global campaign, then they did not need to get any permissions. The people working on these propaganda shows have a very easy task. They do not need to verify anything. They do not need the data. They needn't understand what information they are using. Nothing is required. They simply need to speak the same, go in the same vein of Russophobia, and everything connected with it. I have one question. When a certain delegation makes a statement saying that they show solidarity with the statements of the US representative, why are they making that? Did they have any data? If the data was passed, are they hiding that? But we see that no one gave any data. So what was used as a basis for such statements? No one has given us anything, and the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons did not get any information from them. There is a notion of samples, materials, and of sample materials of what was found. Did anyone except the British authorities receive these data? No one did. How can we show solidarity with what we do not know anything about, since we do not have any regional data? This is just science fiction. Everyone is using something and talks about the origins of the substance, not understanding what substance they are talking about. You might as well, along with your colleagues and people from the street, come and support Theresa May. This is not a matter of facts. This is not a matter of knowledge or investigation. This is a matter of ideological support. This all means ideological support. This has nothing to do with the investigation. Britain did not give anyone any data at all. I've seen it, you've seen it. There were phone talks by Theresa May and her European colleagues and other people, perhaps, but I'm not sure that they could use the phone to pass the samples of a chemical substance. I understand that our technologies are very advanced, especially after statements of certain people in London on the possible cyber attack against Moscow. Perhaps they have unlimited technologies, perhaps, but they could not pass the samples through the phone. You see, this is about the work which should be carried out by experts, especially when we talk about the Security Council, especially when we're talking about aggression against the state. They need to provide the facts. Let me say once again, before we talk about it in the Security Council, this matter should be discussed in the Organization for Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, a specialized organization for these issues. Are they doing this to delay the issue, to flesh it out and pass it later? Perhaps they are scared to pass it now or unwilling to do so. Apparently they are hiding the truth, simply hiding it. No one provides any data on the incident. We do not even know the circumstances of how it happened. Who was the attacker? Was it a group of attackers? Was it an organized crime group or a person? Who was that? And how did this happen exactly? No one knows, but they've already drawn conclusions of a large scale. Yes, please. But still, I have a new question. Is there a legal mechanism that Russia could use? Yes, of course there is. We've talked about it. But why wasn't it discussed in the Organization for Chemical Weapons? We've been talking about this. We made an official statement and passed a diplomatic note to Britain. Let me say it once again. We took several steps. We sent a note. And when the British Prime Minister declared to the whole world that her state was attacked, that the traces of the substance, which were not given to anyone except Britain, when Theresa May said that traces of this substance and of its production were somehow linked to the Russian Federation, our embassy in London sent a diplomatic note to the Foreign Office suggesting that we use the mechanism of the Convention on Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, in particular point 2 of Article 9. This was publicly stated, and in order to prevent the situation when something is not reported to Theresa May, we did so, because we've seen examples of that. Take a look at the story of the meeting between Lavrov and Tillerson, when we transferred data on this meeting, and you were lied to, saying that we did not give the data. So, in order to avoid such cases, saying that the note didn't come, the Russians did not pass any notes, they made it up. That is why, at the same time, Sergei Lavrov openly declared our proposition made officially to London to use the relevant point of the relevant article of the Convention on the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. Besides, giving a speech on the very same day at the relevant session of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, the Russian representative, Mr. Shulgin, gave a detailed version of the Russian proposition on the work of this convention. And this was addressed directly to the British delegation, and this was done in the presence of experts and delegations from other countries, but we did not receive any reaction. The debate continued, and answering our proposal, Britain refused to use this mechanism. Sergei Lavrov also publicly and openly stated another thing. We said everything. We said that perhaps our British colleagues could not know something. We said that other countries could not know something. We said that in accordance with this mechanism, it takes 10 days to prepare an answer on the cooperation proposal. But if we use this article, they need to transfer all the materials and all the data that Britain possesses. Sergei Lavrov also said that in case this article for some reason would not be used, there are other mechanisms of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons which could be used. Once again, during the next session of the organization, our representative Mr. Shulgin once again gave Britain all the possible options of the work within the framework of the convention and the organization. But they answered this with their information and propaganda statements, in fact refusing to work with the convention. This is what we have today. And as for the events in the Security Council, you've all seen that and heard that. Once again, read the statement by Mr. Nebenzia, and this was another political show using the mechanisms of the UN Security Council. That's it. I would like to reiterate and say once again that Russia has officially stated that it is ready to work using all the mechanisms within the framework and using the relevant instruments and tools of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. As of today, this trend is only getting stronger. London refuses to work within this legal field. Everything has been brought into the public sphere, turned into another campaign. And the next phase of this Russophobic hysteria.
Yes, please. Eurasia Daily, the representative of the U.S. State Department during his visit to Pristina said that the United States support the transformation of Kosovo's armed forces into the army, and no one has right to say anything against if we're talking about the Kosovo security. Could you please comment the situation, and do you think that any attempts to establish Kosovo's army can result into the escalation of the situation, particularly security situation? No, I don't. It doesn't seem so, because we know about this fact. It's not a question about if it seems or not seems. We are confident about that the establishment of Kosovo stayed the way it was done. All the goals that were pursued in honor to torn apart, to tear apart Serbia and establish an individual territory, the way how the information campaign was launched, all the consequences or results are additional factors that make contribution to the non-stability in the region, and the establishment of armed forces whose establishment didn't result into the establishment of a state. It's only escalated the situation in the region even more. Yes, please. Japanese TV company Asahi, Ms. Zaharova, what retaliatory measures can be taken by the minister? Because Theresa May say that they're ready to freeze assets. They are cancelling
the visit of the British royal family to the FIFA World Cup. So what action can be taken by the Russian Federation? We will talk about them later. We are working on that at the moment. Yes, please. Ms. Zakharova, I have a simple question for you. How the situation is, how this situation is dangerous? How much is it dangerous? Do you have certain scale? So if you have it, please offer it to us. Maybe percentage, maybe colors that you have. Maybe you have certain colors for the degree of danger. What paradigm are we talking about? If it's dangerous, not dangerous, it's truly dangerous. The head of a nuclear state, of the nuclear state, goes to the parliament. There are two branches of power that take an important step that they can take. They accuse Russia of aggression against their country, and they issue 20-hour ultimatum. They just are detached from their reality, which is very dangerous. Because if you take, they are totally detached from the reality, they ignore the real consequences. It seems to us that it's a talk show that does not imply any communications, any international rules. It ignores the life of the international world. This is just an opportunity to express your opinion and to make a story. What do you think? It's a very dangerous situation. As for the scale, I reiterate, just let's talk about the paradigm. Let's talk the degree of the danger. I'm not talking about the identifying the degree of danger. I'm talking about the understanding that the people who they come to power, they are irresponsible. And this is happening in many states. They give some promises, some empty promises. Earlier, politicians, when they fought for power, they made some promises for people. They knew in advance that they won't, that some of their promises won't be translated into practice. But today, it seems that we see a real crisis in the political system of many countries. Because they don't need external factors in order to address their internal issues, but we see a large-scale campaign that implies an arsenal of threats and statements in order to stimulate their internal processes. I just don't even doubt that Theresa May's case has an internal factor, maybe. She wanted to look like a strong leader, but we see that she's a different leader. And I don't think that it's necessary for me to give any evaluations about that. You understand everything. My name is Yelena, is from Dana Daily. I'm talking about the German political refugees. They are in the Russian embassy in Riga. They say that they will be tomorrow in Moscow. The question is whether they are going to have political refuge or temporary refuge. As we know, the people they served in the nuclear facility, it means that the classified information that he received was quite valuable. He's ready to share this information with Russia. And another question, if he's going to be united with his family, I don't have any information about that. I cannot say anything. I need to specify that. If we're talking about our consulate general, I need to specify that information to find the details. I'll give it to you personally, or I'll give it to everyone during the next briefing. Yes, please. Boris Sanzov, hello. I have a question that I have during our interview. This is the Bulgarian national. He forgot his phone and he's asking, could you please visit Bulgaria? And the second question that I have, you are talking about real men. Real men, they were proud of Bulgaria. And those who weren't able to visit Bulgaria will help them to do that. As for my visit to Bulgaria, I'll need to think about that. Thank you for your invitation. I already have one. And in contrast to Sergei Lavrov, who didn't take the invitation issued by the Great Britain, your invitation that you have issued with your heart, I will take it and I will think about it. Yes, please. Timur Silivanov, Sputnik. First, Ms. Zakharova, I would like to express my gratitude to about the situation that you told about, the decision that you had with the parliamentarian Mr. Slutsky. You are so concerned by men. I'm concerned as a Russian citizen. Yes, as a citizen, okay. In Vilnius, the Association of Forgotten Soldiers were asked to destroy the monument on the tomb of the Red Army and the Danilov Cemetery. The Russian ambassador said that Russia didn't want to do that, but Russia is ready to take military measures. They are talking about a tomb of Lithuanian citizens in Siberia. So what's your reaction to that? And the second, the Ministry of Justice of the Russian Federation included in Tuesday the International Center of Electoral Studies as the organization whose activities are not welcome in Russia. So what's your reaction on that? And do you think that today we witness an attack conducted by the West against Russia and the electoral process? Do you think there will be any conflicts? So you, I think, have joined us recently. In the beginning, I have talked in greater detail about the actions taken against the Russian Federation, particularly by the Great Britain. So London wanted to use this story and to connect it with our internal processes. I think we're also talking about black PR attempt to tarnish Russia's reputation. There are attempts taken to do everything within the framework of this media campaign to isolate and contain Russia. There were attempts to do that again. These attempts were not successful. They tried to unite regions in the coalition to isolate Russia, but these attempts were not successful. But the West still wants to do that, and actions taken by London and support provided by the American political establishments. Bearing this in mind, we can say that all these attempts are still being made. Stakes are high, and no one wants to abandon them. You had also a question about the two questions were about Lithuania. As for the monument, I think that our ambassador has said everything you need. But this is a part of the media campaign to rewrite history, because monuments is you know, is like a visual instrument of all the historical dates and events. This is a visualization tool, because not everyone reads chronicles, because times, because a lot of time has passed since the end of the Great Patriotic War, because previously young generation knew all the details from their relatives, from their grandmothers and mothers and grandfathers and great-grandparents. So today, historical memory within a family, particularly in Eastern Europe, it's fading, because there are less and less witnesses that can say what happened there. And the new generations will say that, it's difficult for new generations to receive the true facts about what happened there. Because when people go on the streets and they pass by these monuments, they see these monuments, they in this way remember everything that happened, because once again, monuments visualize all these memories. The more we go in our discussions of the events of the Great Patriotic War, the more we should say that less and less people read historical documents, because any attempts to destroy this monument is an attempt to delete all this information about that, so that people could build and create new concepts. In order to create a new history of the Great Patriotic War, it happens everywhere in the Eastern Europe, not in all countries, but in most of them, particularly countries that you mentioned. There are many other states. There are hybrid attempts to do that, when states take every steps in order to prevent the destruction of monuments. And they remember the contribution made by the soldiers of the Red Army. But, however, there are political movements who support the idea to destroy the monuments. There are vandalism acts, desecration acts. So we see large-scale, massive attempt to clean up the information field so that no one will impede these people to shape new history of the Second World War, the Great Patriotic War.
As regards specifically the respond measures that you've asked about, I will clarify it and get back to you later. News.ru. I have a question regarding Syria. My first question: on the 13th of March, the U.S. announced convening a meeting on the southeastern zone in Syria, whether it will take place. Can we say that the Oman platform still functions? And my second question is the following: tomorrow there is a meeting in Kazakhstan. Do you work on organizing a second round of negotiations in the former format, or it is no longer relevant? As for the Astana process, it still remains relevant. Obviously, the format and level of the meeting of participants of this process can differ depending on the situation, but the head of the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and heads of relevant agencies and leadership of the country have repeatedly reaffirmed the importance of the Astana process. Our constructive and important role and the important role of Kazakhstan has been reaffirmed. As regards the time of the next meeting, I will clarify it. And are there any other questions? Thank you. I have a question regarding the new appointment in the U.S., I mean the new leader of the CIA. Why should that worry everyone? People trembled in the audience. Well, then they understand what I'm talking about, and it really concerns everyone. According to the U.S. media, she has been involved in tortures. Not only tortures report, not only media reports that, public organizations have even made relevant statements. Well, Ms. Zakharova, I still have the following questions. We know that there are regular detentions and of citizens by the U.S. Secret Services. Following this appointment, shall we expect a new wave of detention? Let me clarify something. I have no information regarding the tortures of Russian citizens. NSBC reported that. No, I mean the tortures of Russian citizens. I have no such information. If you have some materials, please hand them over to us. Yes, we will. There are questions of undue detention conditions of Russian citizens, to put it very correctly, when they are refused medical assistance, they are refused contacts, that they are should be allowed for them as detainees. But as regards tortures, let's be cautious with words. It's not a matter of populism, it's a matter of specific details. If you have information, please hand it over to me. I will clarify it on my part as well. It is an internal appointment in the U.S. It is about the decision of the U.S. administration. It is an internal affair of the United States of America, undoubtedly. As regards the reaction of NGOs, I believe they have a full right to express their concerns about specific decisions. The NGOs, they deal with human rights issues. But again, it is an internal appointment that has been made by the leadership of a sovereign state. If they believe this will make their work more efficient and more effectively, then it's their decision. After the yesterday's Security Council meeting, do you expect that the U.S. will join the sanctions introduced by the U.K. against Russia? It's up to them, up to the United States to decide. What we see is that a number of representatives of the political establishment have made a career on that, I mean, introduction of anti-Russian sanctions and lobbying of anti-Russian laws, adopting anti-Russian measures. People have made good careers and built up a capital on that. Let's be honest, it's this work is not made for free. The political system in the U.S. and the valid legislation enables lobbyist activities that is being paid. So many people have built up a capital and made a career in the U.S. through their lobby activities. Many people simply stay in office over decades thanks to their work, and many people have made a good capital. How the anti-Russian campaign will further evolve in the U.S., this question should be asked somewhere else. We can have long discussions over who benefited from this case. There is no single parameter, no single motive that the Russian Federation might have had not to commit such things, but to refuse cooperation on this issue. Our greatest wish today is to start specific work with the British side on this matter. We cannot simply realize why we are not provided, and not only we, but no one is provided with specific evidence. even if it is provided to those who have supported the campaign in a closed format, it will raise even more questions. Why isn't the international mechanism in place been applied? Do they want to bring the anti-Russian campaign to a new level? Yes, that's obvious. What happened yesterday at the UN and attempts by the relevant delegation didn't left any doubts that there is another aspect of this story, namely to link together all elements of the use of chemical wars, chemical weapon, things that are happening in the Syrian Arab Republic, allegations of the use of the chemical weapons by Syria with connivance of the Russian Federation, and things that have been voiced yesterday. It all suggests the following logic, and it is supported by the expert community. They presented as a proof that the Syrian government uses chemical weapons in Syria, and Russia supports it. And as a final evidence, they present the fact that Russia used chemical weapon in the UK. So another motive of this campaign is to link together all elements and to get the best from this story with the chemical weapons. It's part of a well-planned plan, and those who cite these versions never tried to consider for a moment why did Moscow need it? Why did Damascus need it? Damascus had a real chance for peaceful life, and right away, right after most part of the country has been liberated from terrorists, when people really get back to their homes, like in Aleppo, for example, when people start coming to agreements, then all of a sudden official Damascus starts using chemical weapon. Why? What for? That's what is accused often by the West. This very idea is absurd. When it all falls apart, then they need some massive information blow, so that people who are behind this plan and invent another story about how Moscow allegedly, ostensibly used chemical weapon in the UK. Why? Why would we need in early March, or when did it happen? In spring 2018? Why would we need it? Have you even tried to consider it? What's the sense of it? Who is the one who benefited from it? Those who over several years have been developing the story about the Russian invasion. Yesterday, Foreign Office published a great video. It's something amazing. It was all about Russia. It says our aggression allegedly started in 2006 with the case of Litvinenko. Before, we used to be a normal country. Then as next step, they cite 2008, when Russia didn't respect the sovereignty of Georgia. Previously, they called it Russian aggression. Now they started calling it the lack of respect for territorial sovereignty of Georgia, because it's now proven that aggression was started by Saakashvili. Now, next step is attack against information bodies of Germany, then violation of airspace of the NATO, and then comes a picture of the president of the Russian Federation, so that no doubts remain that he in person has invented that all. But I have one question. Why didn't you include in that video the cyber attacks that we are accused of? Has official London recognized that we have nothing to do with that? If they mentioned cyber attacks on Germany, is it now over with the interference into the US elections? Does Britain doubt it? It is just a nonsense what we are witnessing now. The logic doesn't work here. But the massive scale of the use of media, involvement of all means of public democracy, statements in the UN, in the parliament, it all forms a general picture. Yes, once again, let me answer the question of your colleague from Italy. Indeed, it is very dangerous for the global stability and peace. Do we have one more question? Public television of Armenia, yesterday in Yerevan, a chairman of the International Committee of the Federation Council, Mr. Kosachev, stressed Russia would not continue weapons supplies to Azerbaijan as it was before 2016. Does it have to do with the fact that Russia sees new risks of renewed conflict? I just can tell you right away, I have no information on that issue. I'll get back to it later. Thank you and see you later.